You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast right now and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk. Man, it's been a minute since y'all heard my voice, man. I apologize, man. It's been about 2 weeks. I had to take some time off, man, and just get some things together. I know y'all understand. Everybody needs a mental break every now and then. I had to take one. Still working on some things with the show, man. I got some stuff coming up. But hey, I hope everybody's been having a great summer so far, man. It's been hot outside. Hot Atlanta is crazy down here. I don't know where y'all may be who are listening to this right now, but it's hot down here in Georgia, man. We've been having a hot summer for real. I actually celebrated my birthday on June 30th on Wednesday. So just turned 29. Excited about that, man. Last year of my 20s. And you know what? A lot of people have already been telling me I'm old, man. And they're telling me, hey, man, 30's knocking on the door already. And I'm like, man, I haven't even been 29 for 24 hours, 48 hours. Can I at least enjoy that before you tell me that I'm getting old? I mean, I know I'm getting old, but I don't look old at all. You know what? 29 and 30, man, that's the new 21. So I don't care what y'all say, man. I feel great. I'm healthy. I'm alive, man. And it's a celebration. Next year, I got to do it big for my 30th. Hopefully going out of the country, man. So I got to start planning that at some point. But hey, like I said, man, I hope everybody's been enjoying summer so far, being safe out there. I know everybody's outside right now, but I hope y'all are being safe, wearing your mask. And sanitizing and washing your hands, man, because we're still in a pandemic. But hey, let's jump into our sports talk, man. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about, man. Some stuff happened while I've been out, man. But let's talk about the most recent stuff that is actually went down, man. The Suns, the Phoenix Suns are going to be advancing to their first NBA Finals since 1993. Chris Paul, man, got over the hump, man. I'm happy for him, man. The Suns knocked off the Clippers in game 6 of the Western Conference Finals, 130-103. And again, like I just mentioned, they advanced into their first NBA Finals since 1993, where they lost to my Chicago Bulls 4-2. Now, let's take a look at game 6, man, and look at the box score and how everything transpired. So, CP3, man, an electric performance, 41 points, 8 assists, 7 of 8 from 3. Booker, man, 22 points, 7 rebounds. Jay Crowder added 19 points. Now, the Suns shot 56% from the field, 54.8% from the three-point line, and they out-rebounded the Clippers 47-32. They also had 54 points in the paint compared to the Clippers' 34 points in the paint. Now, the Clippers' leading scorer was Marcus Morris with 26 points and 9 rebounds. Paul George followed that up with 21 points and 9 rebounds. DeMarcus Cousins had 12 points off the bench. The Clippers shot 41.8% from the field and 30% from the three-point line. Now, let's look at the Suns, man. Huge credit and hats off goes to head coach Monty Williams and the exceptional job that he's done with this team in just his second year. The Suns, like I already mentioned this on another show, man, they finished the regular season 51-21, which was the second best record in the NBA and their best record since 2006 and 2007. The Suns only won 19 games 2 years ago. Now, I know the coach of the year went to Tom Thibodeau, but I really, really felt like Monty should have won, man. With the job that he's done and how he's turned this organization around in just 2 years, man, it's been outstanding to see the work that he's put in and how he's gotten these guys to buy into him in the system that he's brought to the table. This team is streaky. They're tough, energetic, and I can't wait to see them on the big stage, man. And I was rooting for the Suns, man. I was really, really rooting for Chris Paul. And we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about him in just a second. But just how he was able to just overcome the adversity that he faced, you know, throughout these playoffs and everything. And I really am happy that we get to see him finally play in the NBA Finals. And look, I'm going to say this right now. I know one Suns fan. Literally, I know one Suns fan, man. That's my frat brother, Judge. Is the only Suns fan that I know. I know there'll probably be a lot of bandwagons after this right now. I mean, I'm pulling for the Suns. You know, I was pulling for them and hoping that they were going to do well. But man, Judge is my frat brother, is the only true Suns fan that I know. And I can actually say that I know. I don't know how many people out there that are listening that can say that they know a Suns fan, but I do. So, hey man, shout out to the Suns, man, for advancing. Now let's talk about Chris Paul, man. So question here is, did Chris Paul's performance in Game 6 officially save his legacy? So if you ask me, I say yes. I think it absolutely, positively saved his legacy. And I'm going to tell you why. Let's look at why. Chris Paul has not had great luck with 3-1 series leads in the playoffs. That's first and foremost. We all know how that's panned out for him. Now let's look at it. So this is dating back to the Clippers when he was playing for them, when they blew a 3-1 lead to the Rockets in 2015. Then when he was on the Rockets blew a 3-1 lead to the Warriors in 2018. Now Chris Paul did get injured in that series, but they still blew a 3-1 lead. Secondly, Chris Paul, he scored 41 points in Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals. He went on an 8-0 run by himself in response to a Clippers 10-0 run. He scored 19 of his playoff career high, 41 points in the fourth quarter. 19 of those points came in the fourth quarter, people. That's how you close a team out. That's how you close. CP3 is reaching his first finals in his 16-year career. Now, Paul is arguably the most accomplished player in NBA history to never appear in the finals. You might ask why. He has the most All-Star appearances and all NBA selections. He started the most playoff games and scored most career points of anyone without a finals appearance. Chris Paul battled, and like I've already mentioned before, he battled and overcame adversity throughout this playoffs run through injuries and COVID. He played with a nerve issue in his shoulder in that first series with against the Lakers. And he actually revealed that he had partially torn ligaments in his right hand. Paul also became the oldest player in league history to score 35 plus points in consecutive closeout games within a postseason. The previous oldest to do that is Michael Jordan at age 33 in 1996. After the game, Paul said, "Couldn't be here without my teammates. It's been a lot, and I want it not just for myself, but for everybody in that locker room." Did Chris Paul save his legacy? Absolutely. I think that what he was able to do on that court in that closeout game on the road was exceptional, man. And let's Pat Bev pushed him in the back. That was crazy. Pat Bev like tried to take Chris Paul out for the finals, man. He was pissed off, man, that they were getting smacked, and he just hauled off and pushed my man in the back, man. What was going on with that, man? Pat Bev, I know you were salty, my guy, but you got to chill out, man. Take your L. You know what I'm saying? Just take the L. But anyway, man, Chris Paul, he saved his legacy. You know, we all know in the back of our minds when they went up 3-1, it's like, man, can he get over the hump? Can he get this monkey off his back? And I think that, you know, he deserves this, man. If anybody in the playoffs deserves this finals appearance, man, it's Chris Paul. You know, 16 years in the NBA and finally being able to get there, he deserves it. And we know how hard Chris Paul works, man. And he just makes everybody around him better. You know, he's made Booker a better player. He's made all these teammates a better players. And shout out to Monty Williams and them bringing him in, man, bringing him to this organization, seeing what Chris Paul could bring to the table. And he's showing them, man, we saw his body work and we've seen what he's been able to do. So I'm excited to see who they're going to face off with. And I got my hopes up of who they'll play. We'll talk about that shortly here. But let's move on, man. So Next up, man, let's talk about the Hawks. So what do the Hawks need to do to knock off the Bucks and get to the finals? Okay. So let's recap what happened in game five. So first and foremost, Giannis was ruled out of game five with that hyperextended left knee that he sustained in game four. So we don't know his status right now going forward for the rest of the series. But right now, he's ruled out. Trae Young was also ruled out of game five with a bone bruise in his right foot. So the Bucks ended up winning game five 123-112. So let's look at this. So Brooke Lopez, 33 points and 7 rebounds, which was a career high for him in the playoffs. Chris Middleton followed that up with a 26-point, 13-rebound performance. Bobby Portis, 22 points and 8 rebounds. When's the next time we'll see that happen? Jrue Holiday, 25 points, 13 assists. The Bucks shot 50% from the field, 31% from the three-point line, 72% from the line, and 66 points in the paint to the Hawks, 36 points in the paint. They never trailed in this game. Now, looking at the Hawks, Bogdanovich, or Bogey is what they like to call him. He had 28 points. He was the leading scorer for Atlanta. Lou Will had 17 points. John Collins had 19 points. The Hawks shot 45% from the field, 39% from three, and they had 14 turnovers. Now, the Bucks haven't reached the NBA Finals since 1974. The franchise actually won their only title in 1971. And I think, before I get into the Hawks, I think with Giannis being out, Middleton is the Bucks' most important player. If you ask me, I think that Middleton is the key piece. But let's talk about, you know, what the Hawks need going forward if they're going to be able to get back in Atlanta, bounce back, force a game seven, and win this series. So first and foremost, number one, Trey needs to be they need Trae Young. And Trae Young being on the court, he needs to at least be 80 to 85% in game six. He can't be any less than that. We saw what happened in game four when he tried to come back in. He wasn't effective at all. I think he only had 3 points in the fourth quarter. That can't happen. Number two, they need to replicate their performances from game one and game four. In game one, Trae had 48 points and 11 assists. That's probably what it might take another performance like that in game six. Collins had 23 points, 15 rebounds. Capella had 12 points, 19 rebounds. Herder had 13 points. The team shot just under 50% at 49.5% from the field, and they shot 87.5% from the free throw line. In game four, Lou Will had 21 points. Bogdanovich had 20 points. Capella and Huter had 15 points apiece. Cam Reddish added 12 points to that off the bench. The team shot, again, 50% from the field, 84% from the line. Again, they're going to have to replicate those performances, you know. Going into this pivotal game six with their backs against the wall, they'll be home here in Atlanta. They're gonna have to bring it. Literally, like there's no other option. Number three, the Hawks cannot just settle for threes. They have to attack the paint and put pressure on the Bucks' bigs. I don't think that they did a good job of that at all in game five. They settled for a lot of threes early on. They weren't falling, and I understand the whole concept of just continuing to shoot. But the problem is with the Hawks in game five, when they were missing the shots, a lot of the times they were shooting and it was one shot. There was no rebound. You know, they would shoot, they would throw up a three. There was no offensive rebound, and it was one shot and out. And you can't have that type of those type of possessions. You have to be able to know that when you're struggling shooting, I get to continue to shoot, but why not drive and put pressure, especially with Lopez, with Giannis being out, you can drive and put that pressure on Brooke Lopez, get him in foul trouble, you know, make them defend you, get to the line. If you're struggling as a shooter, the best thing that you could do is get to the free throw line and see a couple go in the rim. Just see a couple of them go in, you know, and that could kickstart you being on a roll and getting hot the rest of the way. Number four, they have to limit these turnovers, man. They had 14 in game five. That's unacceptable. And I think the 14 turnovers accounted for 14 points, actually. That can't happen. They have to play with more energy. That's number five. They had to play with more energy. The team was very lackadaisical in game five from the start. You know, they came out slow. I think they had a turnover. The first possession that they had, they were slow with closing out on shots on the defensive end. Milwaukee was getting a lot of open threes, a lot of open shots. They were penetrating, getting a lot of easy layups, and it was just, the game was so easy for the Bucks. They made it so easy with that lack of enthusiasm, lack of energy. Number six, they have to rebound the basketball, man. They have to fight. You know, Capella, Collins, I know that there's a size advantage, man, but y'all have to get in there and y'all have to fight. There was a size advantage when they were playing Philadelphia. You know, get in there, get big. Play big. Capella, you need to get in there in that gym. Get you some bench presses in, get them push-ups in. Cause you gotta play big. You can't go up there playing soft now, cause you're gonna get eaten alive. So they gotta come with it. Number seven, they have to utilize their time better during offensive possessions. There was too many instances in game five where they were running down the shot clock to 2 seconds, 1 second, and they were forcing up a bad shot or getting a shot clock violation or turning the basketball over because they're trying to force a pass with 1 or 2 seconds left on the shot clock, and you're trying to throw it to somebody for them to shoot it with half a second left. You can't do that. And last but not least, number eight, man, they got to show some heart. Fight for the basketball, man. Get on the floor. It's do or die. Like I said, this is it. We saw this situation happen with Philly. You know, they lost. They had to come back home, back against the walls, game six, just like they're doing now. And they were able to get that W, bounce back, force that game seven. And, hey, anything can happen in game seven. Hawks got to force this game seven. But that's what they need to do if they're going to be able to beat this Bucks team. Because even without Giannis being out there, man, this Bucks team has been, they've been tough to reckon with. So and they've shown that. The next up, man, let's talk about what's going on in the NFL real quick before I give you my finals prediction. So we already know the Suns are in there, and I'm gonna give you who I predict to face off against the Suns in the finals. But let's talk about what's going on in Washington, man, with the Washington football team. So the NFL has fined the Washington football team $10 million after an investigation into their workplace culture. So let's talk about this. So the league actually stated that the money that they were fined, the $10 million, will be used to support organizations committed to character education, anti-bullying, healthy relationships, and related topics. Now, Lisa Friel, the NFL's special counsel for investigations, she said they found Washington's workplace to be highly unprofessional. Lisa also stated that bullying and intimidation frequently took place, and many current and former employees actually described the culture as fearful. Now, when reports and claims were made to the HR department, they were not investigated and no discipline was involved. The team actually had been under investigation since July of 2020 from numerous sexual harassment allegations by previous employees over a 15-year period. Wow. Now, investigator Beth Wilkerson interviewed more than 150 people. Now, these are a mixture of current and former employees. Now, many women reported having experienced sexual harassment and lack of respect in the workplace. Senior execs engaged in inappropriate conduct and they used demeaning language and public embarrassment. Now, owner and CEO Dan Snyder stated, "I have learned a lot in the past few months about how my club operated. It is now clear that the culture was not what it should be, but I did not realize the extent of the problems or my role in allowing that culture to develop and continue." Snyder went on to say that he has remorse for the victims and that this will never happen again. Dan will actually step back to focus on a new stadium plan and other matters. And Dan's wife, Tanya Snyder, who's the co-CEO, will take over the day-to-day duties for the next several months. Let me stop right here, okay? So here's this is ridiculous that this actually went down, man. And this is insane. First of all, I need to dissect Dan Snyder's comments, man. So he said that he just now learned a lot, you know, over the past few months about his club, was how they were operated. And it's now clear to him that this wasn't what it should be. He didn't realize the extent of the problems, first and foremost. So you realize that there were problems. So you knew that there were problems going on. So he knew that there were problems, but he said he didn't realize the extent of the problems. As the CEO, why do you not know that? Why do you not know the extent of the issues that are going on in your organization? You're the head. You have to be able to lead. There's no way you can tell me that he was totally oblivious to everything that was going on over this. A 15-year period, all the way up to now, investigations that have happened back in July of 2020, there's no way you can tell me that there was not one instance that he was not aware of and he was just totally oblivious to all of it. I refuse to believe that. And he told you. He knew there were problems, but he didn't know the extent. You want to know why he didn't know the extent of the problems? Because he didn't try to find out. He stayed away. He didn't want to become involved. And that's an issue. Now, all senior execs, including the Snyders, you know, him and his wife, they will take part in training and workplace conduct, which will cover topics such as bullying, diversity and inclusion, LGBTQ issues, microaggression, and unconscious bias. Man, this needs to be a huge wake-up call around the league, man. I think CEOs and owners, they need to hold their clubs accountable and pay more attention and be involved, man. It's not enough to say that you didn't know. You know, that there's no excuse for that. It's not enough. You need to become involved, know what's going on in the day-to-day operations in your organization. Talk to your execs. It starts from the top down, man. You have to set the example as a CEO, as an owner. You have to hold your staff accountable. And for the HR department to not even go into detail and trying to investigate these allegations that took place, that's piss poor sorry. And there's no excuse for that, too. They need to be wiped clean and bring in an entire new HR department. That's inexcusable. You know, this just needs to be, and for me, I think that there needs to be a lot more, you know, attention paid into situations like this. There could be other organizations out there like this that have had this stuff going on, and you never know. You know, you have no idea. This just needs to raise awareness about, again, workplace conduct, man. Sexual harassment in the workplace, that's sexual harassment, period, is inexcusable. And in the workplace, somebody who's trying to work hard and earn money to and pay bills and keep up their style of living, and they can't even feel comfortable. Women can't feel comfortable when they're coming to work. That's crazy, man. Men and women, public embarrassment. There's no excuse for that. And they need to be held accountable. That $10 million, okay, that it's all fine and dandy, but the individuals need to be held accountable separately. Each individual. Training and workplace conduct, that's all good. But hold these people accountable, man. Make an example out of them. Because that's what it's going to take. You can't just sweep stuff like this under the rug and, oh, we'll snap them on the wrist. And they were in the article, it actually mentioned that some of the victims said that, you know, they felt like that $10 million, that's nothing. That's a mere slap on the wrist. And how can you blame them? More needs to be done, you know, to emphasize this and make sure that it doesn't happen again. But that's just my thoughts on that. And, you know, thoughts and prayers go out to the victims of the situation. And I hope things get better. But now let's move on, man, and talk about, last but not least, my finals prediction. So I'm going to say right now that the Suns are going to match up against the Atlanta Hawks. Call me crazy. I know it. I'm a Bulls fan, but I live in Atlanta. I'm pulling for the Atlanta Hawks, man. I think they get Trae Young back for game 6. I think Giannis will still be out. I think that will give the Hawks momentum with Trey being back out there, they'll get their energy up. They'll correct those issues that they had in game five. They'll come out swinging and they'll get this big win in Atlanta. They'll go back to Milwaukee with the Bucks backs on the line. Giannis will be back, but he'll be a little rusty. And I think the Hawks, again, for the second series in a row, close out in game seven, the Bucks, and match up against the Suns in the NBA Finals. Call me crazy. That's okay. It's all right. But I'm rooting for the Hawks, man. I really am. I'm pulling for them, especially because, hey, I want to go to an NBA Finals game. It'll probably be $1,000 a ticket. I hope not. But I'm praying I can win some free tickets somewhere. But, hey, man, who doesn't want to see Chris Paul and Trae Young, Book? You know, that's a nice battle of young players. And then you got the veteran Chris Paul in the mix, too, and Lou Will. You know, that'll be a sight to see, man. I think they match up really well with each other. So that's what I want to see. That's what I'm pulling for. That's my prediction. And like I said, man, that's my story. That's my stance, and I'm sticking to it. And one more thing before I go, man, and end up, man, this wasn't actually in my lineup, but I just wanted to say this, man. We all know what's going on with Sha'Carri Richardson, the news that broke out with her not being able to run in her individual race, the 100 meter, after just qualifying not too long ago, a couple weeks ago, after not just qualifying to be able to be in the Olympics. She tested positive for marijuana, which is put, like I said, she won't be able to run her individual races. She accepted a 30-day suspension or whatever, and so she'll be eligible July the 27th, and she'll be able to, she'll still be able to compete in the relays. But I just wanted to say this, man. I've been seeing a lot of stuff on social media. A lot of jokes are being thrown out about her, and a lot of negative things have been said about her. And I really find that very insane. You know, you have a girl, she's a 21-year-old black woman. And a lot of people who are commenting on the situation, they don't even know the whole story about what happened. No, we're not condoning, you know, smoking marijuana or anything like that. But for those of you who don't know what happened and didn't actually see her go on TV and actually be interviewed and go more in depth about the situation, she was actually, the day before she ran in that qualifying race, to qualify for the Olympics, she was actually going into what she thought, you know, just a normal interview, you know, heading into the race. In that interview, the reporter who was interviewing her told her that her biological mother had passed away. So she didn't hear this from family. She heard it first from a reporter, unexpectedly. Okay. Obviously, some of us may know what it's like to lose, you know, a parent or, you know, something like that. But there are a lot of us who don't know what that's like, you know. Many of us do know what it's like. Many of us don't. And to find out that way, it really took a toll on her. You know, she mentioned not being able to really be able to take that in, you know, with and having to come up to build the strength up to be able to go out there and race after just hearing that news. That's tough. And, you know, I really just wanted to say this, that at the end of the day, you know, yes, she stood up, and a lot of people say, man, she needs to take accountability. She did do that. She stood up. She said she knew what she was doing. She knew it was going to be, she knew it was wrong. She knew the rules and everything. But here's my point. At the end of the day, none of us on this earth are in any position to judge any other human being for how they deal with pain, how they decide to cope with their pain. Especially not being in that same situation and in that person's shoes. We're not in a position to judge with how people cope. No, we're not condoning that. But how can you judge somebody when you're not in that same situation? Hear me when I say that. When you're out there judging other people, If the shoe was on the other foot and you did the same thing, how would you feel like people would view you? How would you feel if people did that to you? Don't drag her name in the mud. Like I said, this is a young black woman who's successful. She's going to have a great career and going to do some great things in the Olympics. She's 21 years old. She made a mistake. She owned up to that mistake. Move on. Stop trying to drag this girl. Okay? The jokes and stuff, it's not cool. It's not cool at all. And I'm not going to sit up here and act like it is, because it's not. And you can take offense to that or not, but I'm here to tell you that's not okay. I'm holding people accountable for that. We got to uplift each other, people. That's what we need to do. But, hey, my mental health is serious, man. You don't know what people are going through mentally. And so my thoughts and prayers go out to Sha'Carri Richardson, and I hope that, she's able to compete, which I think she will. And happy that Nike is still standing by her and her sponsor, and she apologized to her fans, her family, and everybody. So, and her haters too. And she said, she let a lot of people down, but to be able to stand up and take ownership for that shows a lot of heart and courage. So, don't put people down, man. Uplift them and just pray for them to continue to have much success and to overcome this. And I think that we're going to see her name years from now, man. Every time she races, she's going to make an impact and she's going to break some records. So pulling for you, Sha'Carri, and we're excited where your career is going to take you, man. But hey, that's all I had, man. I appreciate everybody for, again, jumping in and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some sports talk, man. And I'm sorry I took that 2-week break, man. But again, I had to take a little mental break, man. Don't hold it against me. But hey, I'll be back, man, to give y'all some good sports talk, man, next week. Keep rocking with me.